I wouldn't even be here if I didn't have to come rescue you.
Oh, yeah? Then go back to Alaska. The truth of it is, you want to go in. You want to fight. But I built this plan from the ground up, okay? I'm gonna deliver my bombs to the locations I picked. This is my chance to fight for Hannah.
You don't own me, I'm not your property. So take a shifty little beady eye off of me.
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, an SBS podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm Head of Curation at SBS On Demand, and I'm joined by my friends, colleagues, and fellow resistors. Hayley Ireland, Channel Manager of SBS On Demand.
Hello.
Natalie Hambley, journalist turned gemologist.
Hi.
And Sana Kadar, host of All in the Mind on ABC Radio National.
Hi.
Hello. We have just watched episode 4 of season 6 of The Handmaid's Tale, and it is called Promotion. It was written by J.C. Heldrick and directed by Natalia Leight. June disrupts the rebels' plans.
Look, if you send Moira in and she gets into trouble, she's on her own. If you send me, you know that I have a commander on the inside. You know he'll help me.
And Commander Lawrence gains power and influence.
They derive their sense of power from their virility.
Power will come from reform.
A lot of great things and big things and small things happen in this episode, so there's a lot to talk about this week. But let's pick a moment that stood out for each of us, big or small. Let's go around the room. Sana, what stood out for you?
I'm going to go with Jonah from Veep. Timothy Simons turning up.
Ugh.
I was hoping he'd play a good guy. He always kind of plays a bit of an asshole,
yeah.
And my God, is he an asshole in this one?
Very much so. Yeah. I think he's Bell. Creep. Yeah, he's the one that I think is on the hit list.
Commander Bell.
Nasty Bell.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, what a reveal. Natalie, what stood out for you?
Oh, it has to be a Rita moment. We don't get a lot of her. But we see her this episode and in a beautiful moment where she's reunited with her sister.
Yes.
Lovely.
It really was. It's, Rita. All we've known is the son she lost in the war, mm-hmm. but yes, a beautiful reunion made possible by Ms. Serena Joy Waterford, and doesn't she let her
what
know
a saint. A bit of a soul. She'd cried a little bit in that moment, right?
A little bit. More pride at the role she played in it, I would think.
Look at what I did for you.
Yes. Hayley, how about you? What stood out for you?
I think the moment that stood out for me was when Lawrence is sitting down with Angela and reading her the excerpt from A Little Princess.
Yes.
It harks back to a previous episode when he was reading, I think, was it Treasure Island?
It was, yeah.
To the other Gilead children that are about to escape a few seasons ago. And it's also just kind of hangs poignantly with that request from Janine for him to take care of Angela, and that he's the one that can kind of help Angela. So that was my special moment.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And the way it just played out through the credits as well,
yeah.
He just kept reading.
Mm.
I love that little fledgling relationship they've got going on. It's beautiful. For me, it was a Moira. Moira got her moment, I cannot live your life anymore. And I think
so good.
Someone had to say it, and that someone had to be Moira. Like, yeah, she's been absolutely living June's life to date, and I think she's had a gutful. All right. So this week we open on very busy scenes at Mayday HQ in No Man's Land. There's military trucks. There's a whole bunch of randos. There's bomb makers. June's watching on, frustrated and fidgety, and, she's not made to feel useful in any way, shape or form, least of all by Mr. Luke Bankhole, who's the centre of it all, and he's just, give me a minute, I've got to work on these plans. The town planner is coming out in him. He's talking about building structures and, he's put some plans into action this week.
It's a whole different Luke, isn't it? After we kind of made fun of him last episode, and I was watching this and I did feel really bad about it.
I didn't.
But look at him go. He's found his place. He's found where he can make a difference and feels useful, as you said.
But to June, it's like he's like play acting, right? We're seeing his activity through kind of her eyes, and it's still a little bit pathetic almost in that, like, she's like, this ain't going to work. What are you doing? You have no idea what you're doing. So it's still, I'm happy that he feels like he's got a promotion, right? He's like the center of attention here. He's planning, he's doing his thing. But she's still kind of like looking down on him a little bit.
Yeah, I think this whole kind of pissing contest they have going on this episode, really. And I think, you know, it all comes out in the end, obviously, to that beautiful ending of this episode. But yeah, he even says at one point in this scene, it's like he's talking about getting his maximum impact and, oh, yeah, we're going to blow some shit up. And I remember there's a line that Moira has in one of the previous seasons where she criticizes June for wanting to blow shit up and fuck the consequences. And that was a critique that she had of June back then. I just feel like the way June also says later on that this is a path she's been down. So I think she's recognizing it's very familiar. It's like, you think it's going to work, but I've been there. unhelpful advice or unhelpful onlooking to him. And here's where Tuilo comes in with the news that Luke is free, and I've never seen anyone so underwhelmed at having charges dropped. He's basically sulking.
Thanks. Well, who wants to go to Alaska? I mean, really.
In the context of the show, Haiti. Alaskan Tourism Board is online one. Yeah, so Luke's case has officially been dismissed, and the intel here is that the Canadians secretly want these commanders gone too, so they help his work to try and get them out of the way worked in his favour, and he's officially been, quote-unquote, deported from Canada. So that rules out going back to Canada, obviously opens the door to Alaska, but...
And so are they currently in no man's land? Is that where this rebel activity is? Where do we think they are?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's the impression I get. It's right. Somewhere in no man's land, not Canadian soil.
Yeah, and not Gilead.
I guess technically we could be at the very edge of the Canadian border somewhere where the authorities aren't really paying much attention.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that.
I also feel like it's not that safe, right? Like they kind of keep alluding to the fact that they're being quite risky with all of their actions. They're being a bit gung-ho. So maybe it isn't safe.
Because no man's land is where they go to battle it out with the eyes and, you know, they always, although they, I don't know, anyways.
Yeah, and it's where Ryan Wheeler is operating. Like, I remember that family in Canada, that's where his dirty business is. But, yeah, this feels, it's like a little outpost maybe on the edge of
it. It does
all
look like they're in, like, a kind of big...
former resort.
Resort in the mountain, somewhere reclusive, you know, away from it all, so... No one's really watching them wherever they are.
Catskill vibes.
But then we're off to Gilead, and this is where Angela has that drawing for Lawrence, and he comments she's influenced by Helen Frankenthaler. There's a little nod to Eleanor. There's a couple in this episode. And Angela is reaching out to him. Like, there's been a couple. She seeks him out in the house and drawing things for him, which...
Kind of see why. It doesn't look like she's got any friends in the house.
And her mum is so cold as well.
Yeah, Naomi tends to shoo her away. Yeah, she's never been super warm with Angela, it must be said.
Yeah, right from when she was a baby. Remember Janine had to, I think, breastfeed her again or cuddle her at some point because she just wasn't connecting.
That's right.
Naomi wasn't connecting with the baby.
Yeah, and I think we see that in this episode too with a Naomi and Lawrence scene because it sort of makes it clear that they don't want the babies because they want babies and love them. They want the babies because they're a source of power and standing in the community. Mm. And we see that, I think, in that moment where she doesn't really have any love or kindness for Angela.
That's right. She's more excited about the jewels that she's getting from Paris.
Yes, yes. Well, look, I get it.
You get it. You absolutely get it.
Says the gemologist.
I like the telling point here that I think a couple of episodes back, Lawrence alluded to the fact that there's Rolexes and Mercedes and, yeah, this is where it's coming right in. You see these trade routes that he was responsible for opening up are really bearing fruit for the wives.
We see Serena wearing silk.
That's
Her clothing is very different.
That is right.
I mean, Luke also alludes to it in the scene previous that it's these new trade routes through New Bethlehem that are exposing new ways in for the rebels.
So, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's all thanks to Lawrence, and he's getting a promotion out of it for the whole New Bethlehem thing, but mostly for the trade routes, let's be honest. But Naomi here shows she does get it, and she's warning him. Well, she's trying to come on to him a little bit, the man in uniform, wink, wink, just to demonstrate you're going to be a high commander. It's not golf and cocktail parties anymore. These guys exercise their virility through their power. She's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about Angela drawing with the pencils, is that unusual for a child in Gilead? Is it because she's in Lawrence's home, she has access to pencils, or are children generally allowed to play with writing utensils?
Oh, that's such a good question.
It is a good question.
Yeah.
There's pictures. I mean, that's what the shopping was done with, pictures when June took it to the shop. So maybe you're allowed to.
And obviously Lawrence reads to her at the end, but that's Lawrence. I was more, interested in the provenance of those pencils.
Yeah. She didn't put a name on it necessarily, but I wonder if you're allowed to draw as a child. But
God, is this the only children's drawing to exist in Gilead?
Sad place.
That's my low light of the episode.
Yeah, exactly. And now we're off to no man's land. So it's Luke and June, and Luke here is disclosing his intentions to go into Gilead. He's going to drive that truck. He's got no intention whatsoever of going to Alaska. So he's driving in to deliver the bombs, and he says to her, "I'm going to stay, and I'm going to do that." So he's just reinforcing his role in this. But it's just they're not connecting, these two.
Yeah, he's really clear to her, like, it's my turn. You've had all of this opportunity and I haven't. I've been like, back here frustrated, this is my turn, you've got to let me do this.
Kind of petulant in the way he says it.
Yeah. It's very annoying how they fight in this episode.
They're kind of like children fighting over toys.
Yeah. They're like so reactive with each other. And I think it's funny that June tells him, she goes on this little argument here about how it's so dangerous in Gilead. And he doesn't understand how dangerous it's become, and he's definitely going to die or something horrible is going to happen. When, don't you think it's kind of the opposite at the moment? New Bethlehem's opened up. There are these new ways into the country that are easier to access than ever. If anything, Gilead's less dangerous than it's ever been, don't you think? So I don't quite understand her. I mean, I think she's just being reactive here, but it doesn't make sense what she's saying to him.
It's true, because also she's not really aware of it anymore. And I think there's a couple of times across the episode where she finds out how things have changed and how a lot of it's changed because of her. Like the Jezebel's now test for poison because she was responsible for the poisoning in that estate back in season 4, I think it was, and the Marthas wear masks. And there's just kind of things, ways that Gilead has adapted as a result of her, but also she's on a bit of a learning as well, so she's really fixed in her views about it's so dangerous, but there's things she doesn't know either. So, yeah, you're quite
that's
right.
That's what struck me about this moment with her and Luke and her and Moira, which is that, like, June's a hero. Like, she has done such amazing things in Gilead. And we saw that last season when young Esther held her in such high regard. Mm. And it's so funny that, like, she can't rest on her laurels. Both her husband and her best friend are just really mad at her, you know. It's like there is no hero worship happening for June at all.
Mm-hmm. And I think in this particular scene as well, like there's just with on the June and Luke dynamic, she has one of those argument ending I love yous. Like he's walking off and it's kind of like, I love you. It's just such an empty one that I think, makes it all the more special when they do actually genuinely say it later in the episode. But, yeah, they're kind of missing each other and having these stupid little petty arguments about who gets more credit for going to try and save Hannah across the episode. But just that, love you! and then we're off to New Bethlehem and it's Rita, your moment, Nat. Aww. Rita on the bus, and she gets a big wave from the Serena Joy Waterford Welcoming Committee.
Because from this, I kind of see the life that June could have had. Mm. Of course she can't, because if she stepped foot in New Bethlehem and showed her face properly, I think she's a very wanted woman after what happened to Fred. But you can see that this would have been a possibility for her, that you can see if it had played out differently, she might have moved to Bethlehem to be closer to Hannah, to aim for that reuniting at some point.
Yeah, which Joseph Lawrence dangled at her last season.
That's right.
He gave her the opportunity, but she threw it back in his face. She just doesn't trust it, for one thing.
Yeah.
And here is Serena baiting for credit. Like we were talking about June not getting enough credit, but there's a whole lot of this throughout the episode with here Serena's throwing it out there, but Rita's not really taking it. Rita's obviously focused on her sister. But Serena's saying, I had to pull a lot of strings to make it happen. And I just thought, Rita was on Angel's flight. Like, if you want to talk about pulling strings and making things happen, I don't know, organising a bus, sure, but organising to get 80-odd kids out by plane out of Gilead, I think it trumps you.
Serena clearly wants to please, though. She's in She's in atonement mode.
Mm-hmm. Very much. And is Rita's sister an Econo wife?
I think that's what her outfit suggested. Mm. It wasn't Martha's outfit, was it?
No.
It looked to me like it was more the civilian outfit.
That's what I thought. And she commented on Rita having been a Martha, so I think, yeah, she's not one.
Right. Mm. And do we remember how people get designated Martha's versus Econo people? Like, how did her sister end up in that role?
Well, a Martha is someone who would otherwise be a handmaid, but the way I see it is they can't have children, or maybe they're older than childbearing. But I remember Beth had her tubes tied, so that's why she was a Martha. And I just feel like they're more, it's a punishment for something in a past life, in their past, our past life, their past life, pre-Gilead. Yeah.
Maybe her son was born out of wedlock kind of thing, and that's what designated her a Martha in the end.
Yeah, we don't really know what Rita's backstory is to have made her become a Martha.
That's so interesting. You think it might have been that it might be a punishment?
That's how I've sort of
Martha,
taken
it. You're a servant. Yeah. You're an unpaid servant. Of course that's a punishment.
I mean, like, living it, I think, is a punishment. Living in Gilead is honestly a punishment. And living in that role is one, but I didn't realize that Gilead was assigning it specifically to be one.
Oh, I would have thought so. I mean, wouldn't you rather be an Econo person? Because then you at least get to live with your family. You have some semblance of free will.
I guess this is where I go, like, it is a job that requires a lot of skill. And I say that because those skills are the skills that I don't have. Like, I would be the worst Martha ever. And so in my mind, I'm like imagining some sort of great British Bake Off scenario to prove that they can actually, you know, make pies or something.
And I should fight for that role to be a servant, right?
Right. And the prize is to be an indentured servant to Fred Waterford.
But there has to be some level of skill involved, because you can't just have...
Well, I think you're forced to adapt, and I don't think you really get the choice.
Natalie, if you were designated a Martha and told you must serve pies to some madam of the house, I think you'd learn quick smart, unless you get a slap across the face. You know?
That's right. I'd be fired quick smart.
Sent to the colonies.
That's right. Yes, and I think also it's punishing professional women as well. There was a Martha who had been at the top of her game. She was a top paediatrician that they had come and see if she could do anything with Angela. So I think, it's punishing professional women, maybe someone with a bit of a history that is being punished and being made to work, quote, menial sort of tasks by force in Gilead.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's always an edge of punishment.
Poor Rita. So I still, but in terms of just thinking about her as a character and now living in New Bethlehem, I kind of hate it for her. Mm-hmm. I was like, you got out. Like, I understand the pull of family, but man, it sort of just feels like the wrong move.
So back in No Man's Land, here's where the announcement is to the group of the intention to target Jezebels. And they're going to set bombs off, and then the military's going to roll in. It's going to be a whole thing. And June's poking holes in this plan. And there's many cutaways to Moira at the mention of Jezebels, and the apparent plan didn't really factor in saving the women of Jezebels. It was just getting the commanders and fuck the consequences, to quote Moira from a previous season. But, you know, she obviously has special insight here as the only Jezebel to really have made it out. But more on that, because we are off to Lawrence's ceremony. High Commander Joseph Lawrence. He's on his knees for the second time in 2 weeks, Natalie.
And we finally also get like an awkward Gilead ceremony, like a ritual, because I kind of do love them, because they're all like terrible. And I have to say, this, in terms of the ones we've seen in the past, this isn't too weird.
It's rather intimate. I'm surprised that it wasn't in front of a big crowd, you know, like in a stately room. It seems to be in like a boardroom or somewhere off to the side, and it's just the most important commanders and high commanders there.
It's boys' club. Boys' club. Yeah. And I love the quotes here from Wharton, who does the ceremony. Obviously, Lawrence asked for him. He thanks him for doing it. But, yeah, the quotes here are run true across the whole episode for me, I think. So he says,
"Behold, how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity, being of the same mind, being in full accord."
So obviously we're starting this episode with disunity with June and Luke and Moira, and everyone's just at loggerheads, really. And then we get there at the end of the episode. But we get some intel that Timothy Simons, his dad is big. So he's got a big time daddy somewhere in.
Big time daddy.
Can we officially refer to him as that from now on?
Yes, please.
This is the best. Oh, I love it.
So Daddy Bell is in DC.
Big time Daddy Bell.
He plays up like a secondhand motorbike, but Wharton is okay with it because his service far exceeds his vices. Mm. So he's happy to turn the other cheek.
But he doesn't want Nick to go.
That is true. He doesn't want Nick to go play with the fellas at Jezebel's, and they're all getting Rolexes thanks to Lawrence, obviously. So Naomi was right. And it's not golf and cocktail parties. And Lawrence has to go and play with the big boys.
The interesting thing about this scene was last week, Serena was testing how much Lawrence was a believer faith-wise in Gilead. This week, he's being tested by Commander Bell about how much he's a believer in the misogyny of Gilead and the sexual dominance of Gilead, which I thought was really interesting. He's being tested on all sides.
That's right, yeah.
And he's not much of a believer in any of those things. Right? What is he doing in Gilead?
That's right. It's all coming down to bear on him this time, isn't it? And in the wake of that, after the ceremony, Wharton goes home because obviously he's not going to Jezebel's. And who's there but Serena, bearing gifts, a nice warm pie.
What is she playing at?
A store-bought pie as well.
Not a Martha-made pie.
That is correct. Yes, and they, speaking of unity and accord, they really get someone who gets you because they, across this scene, she is putting it out there, just baiting him a little bit for that credit that she didn't get from Rita, but he's absolutely giving it to her in spades.
Yes. He is really coming across as a good guy.
Isn't he?
Which is so disconcerting.
But also not your typical Gilead high commander. Like, he hasn't gone out with the boys at Lawrence's promotion. And here he's saying how he never got used to being served by a Martha, and he is serving the coffee himself. Like, there's a lot here to suggest he's not your regular high commander, which is interesting.
Absolutely. Mrs. Wharton has passed on. How is he single? How is he a high commander whose wife passed when Rose was young, and Rose is much older and pregnant now? So what's the story there? But yeah, so confirmation he's single.
I'm just thinking, this is, yeah, how has he managed to continue as a widower for so long? And also I'm thinking, you know, his daughter has a disability, and usually in societies like this, people with disabilities are kind of cast off, right? I wonder if he had to fight to keep her. I wonder, yeah, what issues that might have raised for him. So yes, he is giving vibes of a good man.
I'm hoping he's proof that, like, a Lawrence, you know, someone who believes in reform and doesn't necessarily believe all of the other stuff, can succeed in Gilead, which gives me hope for Lawrence. But that's, I kind of see them both mirroring each other a little bit.
So my thing on this now is, I'm assuming Lawrence is going to be done for this season. I just can't see him surviving New Bethlehem. It looks great, but Gilead people, like these high commanders that are now his group, I think they all hate it. They kind of don't want it to succeed as much as they enjoy the Rolexes. And like, they don't want that level of wokeness coming into Gilead. And if Luke and Moira and the rest of that crew succeed, then it could all go to hell. And if so, Lawrence is out. And so I'm now looking at Nick going,
because it was his trade routes that allowed the rebels to come in.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Right. And so Nick is now caught between two men. And he always has to have a protector in Gilead. And it used to be Fred, and then it became Lawrence, and now it's looking like Wharton. And so now, and like, so this episode, he was caught between the two of them. Was he going to go? And like, and both of the men are looking out for him. And so when it comes to the choice of, are you going to go to Jezebel's, Lawrence is trying to do him a favor and also probably trying to get him in there so they can talk and see what's happening at Jezebel's. But then Wharton says, no, 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 and comes up with an excuse. And I'm like, oh, who should he align himself with? Mm. And I'm thinking he should be aligning himself with Wharton.
Interesting, because the way I read that was, I saw Lawrence looking to Nick to back him up and help him out, because that's what he did last episode by like covering for him,
right,
you know, assigning him at the border. So that's what I was reading. Like, he was like, no, no, come on, be with me, help me out here. And Nick abandoned him there.
Definitely.
It would be so good if Nick had gone to Jezebel's, because he could have made some contacts and we could have seen how it's all working. It could have laid some groundwork for episode 5, but he's been put out of the picture for that, which is interesting.
You're right. He is always caught between daddy figures.
Yeah. Of a sort. That's right. And there was one even before Fred. There was Price, who put him in Fred's household in the first place. Yeah, he's lost boy with all the daddy figures.
And bringing it back to Serena and her pie, I'm very curious to see whether...
Not a euphemism.
I was like, what was the connection there? But okay, we'll go.
Very curious to see if Serena will also see the opportunity in aligning herself with Wharton after, you know, having been brought into New Bethlehem by Lawrence.
Mm. She's a very savvy operator. So she's probably looking at her options and thinking that he's shaping up as a good one.
That's right. Well, this scene, you know, he's flattering her ego by, and rightly giving her equal credit. I don't know that she wants, like, who wants to take credit for creating Gilead?
She does.
100%. Yes, but, you know, she's putting it out there. He's absolutely backing it up. You know, putting down Fred, a better man, would have encouraged your influence. He's like... He gets her. And, yeah, the light in this scene, you know, the way we've talked about it before, but the way New Bethlehem is lit and it's just all so sunshiny all the time, a little bit Truman Show-y, but we go to the darkness of No Man's Land and the still cranky June, Moira, Luke dynamic, that this is where they see Janine. The printer spits out the image of Janine. She is one of the women at Jezebel's, was news to both of them. Changes everything for June. Obviously, she wants to get there now, if she didn't before, and she wants in. And that mention of Janine and just seeing her image spat out on the printer has that swooping upside-down shot of her at Jezebel's as Kitty, with Belle belittling her. It's the frat boy commanders having their playtime and baiting Lawrence, goading him to take Kitty off to a private room, and that's where Lawrence and Janine have their moment, and she gets a great line.
Yeah, well, you married a real cunt.
I'm a sucker for these good lines.
Yeah, they're good.
Here's where the insight is that he sent her to Jezebel's instead of the colonies as a way to sort of try and quote-unquote help. So, you know, at least there was a bit of strategy there on his part. But, of course, she's a sex slave at Jezebel's. So, and here's where she's goading him that, you know, Angela is safe for now, but bad things happen to commander's daughters too. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting line, because we've got Hannah, who's a commander's daughter. We've got Angela, who's a commander's daughter. We've got Rose, who's a commander's daughter as well. So that was interesting.
It was like no one is safe. That's like right. No girl or woman is safe. And we know that those girls are being prepared for marriage and at really young ages as well. So when he said that Angela is safe, I just thought, she isn't.
Nope.
Not even emotionally safe in that house, let alone physically safe in Gilead.
That's right. And also, she's safe with him. And if your theory plays out, Nat.
Yeah.
If he's not there for long. Yeah.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Because also he ends it by saying he'll do everything he can to keep her safe.
I have to say, well, first, two things. One, the high commanders at Jezebel's, as disturbing as that scene was, it also kind of made me laugh, because I thought, yeah, here they are in the den of depravity and they're just hanging out talking to each other.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's just what they want. They just love each other. They just want to be with each other. Like, they kind of don't even want the women.
Yeah. Like, well, they want them to sit on their laps and just make them feel special. But ultimately, it's just, ugh, yuck.
It's like those guys, you know, just can't figure out how to have a good time. Like, anyway, so that kind of made me laugh. But like, I know, Haiti, it was your highlight, but it also was one of mine, just that the real moment of kindness that we see in this episode comes from Lawrence when he's awkwardly in that room with Janine and they're trying to have a conversation, and then he does actually figure out what she would need to hear in that moment, and he very kindly gives it to her, and which I thought was really, really lovely. And then it sort of, I was thinking about what he does with Angela later, and he is supportive to her. And I just thought, I can see why he wouldn't want to. It's really risky to love anyone in Gilead, which goes back to why, no, she isn't safe. But if he starts caring about her, that's kind of when his life gets messed up. Like, he's still so cut up about his wife. Yeah. And so if he actually lets himself love Angela, then he's really opening himself up to be even more compromised.
Absolutely.
Speaking of commanders' daughters and bad things happening to them, what we've just been saying makes me think about Rose again, makes me wonder about her, because she is much older now and she's in her first marriage. And so she wasn't married off as a teen bride, it looks like. And so how did she escape the worst fate that can befall a young girl in Gilead? What is her father been up to? How has he been managing to protect her all this time?
Well, I mean, she is old enough to have been grown when Gilead first came into being, I guess, because she's...
Gosh, well, how long do we think Gilead's been around at this point?
Well, it was 7 years old in season five, so it's kind of 7 or 8 years. And Hannah, it was when it was all starting to go down with Hannah.
That's
so I guess
right,
I always look to Hannah's age. Hannah's age.
So she hasn't come of age in Gilead. So.
Yeah.
That might explain why she's escaped that early marriage.
Okay, yes, that makes a lot of sense.
I think so. Which also means that Wharton was a widow when it all started to happen, if Rose was young. And also, actually, on that, Sana, it's an interesting point about Rose's safety, because Wharton exercises some concerns about the pregnancy and just how that might go through. And Serena is saying they have the best prenatal care in New Bethlehem and in Gilead. So, yeah, that's kind of maybe a hint of how Rose being pregnant, there could be some elements of danger going forward.
Oh. I do wonder about that comment about the best prenatal care. Mm. Like, maybe if you're the baby, but I feel like if you're the mother.
Well, we've seen that play out with Of Matthew, absolutely.
Yes. If you're the mother, maybe not.
You're an incubator and then they let you pass. Yes.
Maybe unless you're a wife rather than a handmaid.
But the wives can rarely bear children. That's the problem. That's the whole reason for handmaids, right?
It's all starting to happen, though. Yeah, Rose is a new day, a new dawn. And also just on that, Esther. We haven't seen Esther yet this season. I wonder if we will, because we last left her chained to a bed, pregnant to Putnam.
Who is Esther? I'm completely blanking on this.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But she was in season four. She was the young wife who had the hero worship of June. So she was very young. McKenna Grace, we had... Friend of the show.
the wife turned handmaid.
She was pregnant? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she got raped by Putnam.
Oh, my God. I completely blanked on that.
And she poisoned herself. She poisoned Janine.
Yes. Are we going to see her again this season?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Last we saw her, she was chained to a bed.
That's right.
For the duration of her pregnancy.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot that.
Yeah. I wonder will we see Esther or indeed any handmaids?
Because we are seeing Lydia again, but we haven't seen Lydia in her actual
habitat.
Yeah, thank you. That's the word. I was like, home is not quite right, but yes, that is it. In her own den of whatever that is.
Yeah. But for now, we're New Bethlehem. This scene with Rita and Nick. So she stops by because she's had this reunion with her sister. She's had a look around New Bethlehem. She's heard. She's obviously read that pamphlet. And so she's wanting reassurance from Nick. Like, is it really as safe as they say? And he says, I think so. And she says, and will it stay that way? And his answer does not fill me with optimism. He says, it's my job to make sure it does. Now, given all the theories that we've got going on about Nick, the way he's shot in this scene, he comes in, he's descending the stairs as he enters the scene. And then while he's talking to her, there's a very prominent shot. The stairway is behind him, like his back is to the staircase. I don't know. I think he's turning his back to promotion because this is...
Oh, interesting.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it. I always read too much into it, but I like it's just so prominent the way he's shot, again, with his back to the staircase. But here's where she, at his urging, like he's reassured her sufficiently that she's thinking of staying put. I think it's a bad idea.
I'm surprised at him convincing anyone else to stay.
He can't not. Like, she kind of can't really ask him and he can't really give a true answer. So
and he could to Rita though.
He could, yeah. That's what I would have thought.
They are alone.
Yeah, he's fairly explicit when he says, you know, this is the safest place for me to be, and this is the safest thing for me to be in Gilead. I think he's being very candid with her.
But then Rita is like, I'm just hugely paranoid, and which means I'd fit right
Rightly
in.
Rightly so. Yeah, we've all watched this show.
And Rita is also close to Serena, and Serena is close to High Commander Wharton, and so I don't know.
Rita's close to Serena.
Yeah. Serena is the one that got her there.
Yeah, but
and they were kind always of like... Rita always. This is what kind of got me. I remember we had this discussion actually when Serena was visiting her mother and Rita was packing her bags for her and Rita went with her. And Rita always seemed to care about Serena and it pissed me off. I was like, no, do not do that. But she always seemed to almost not hold it against her or something, or she still felt maternal towards her or something yeah. like that.
I think she saw the damage to Serena as well. Like, you know, she saw that she was abused and I guess could understand that or, you know, could rationalise that that's why she was lashing out at her and to June. But in Canada... Rita wasn't, yeah. She wouldn't go and watch, she would not go and visit Serena at first.
Yeah. I think the connection they always had was that the fact that they were both women of faith, like they both had that. So that's like, that's the most I ever saw between the two of them.
Yeah. I think she's cautious of Serena and rightly so. But yeah, I wouldn't say they were close, but the, yeah, she certainly got some kind
of. I'm not saying they're close and I'm not saying they're best friends and I'm not saying they've got a WhatsApp chat, you know, like. But I'm just saying they are characters that cross paths and talk. So I would be, I understand if Nick felt that he couldn't be honest, but maybe, you know, Nick just really doesn't know. Like he is not a high commander. He's just trying to keep his head above water. That's right. And hoping for the best.
Yeah, I wouldn't be trusting Nick to protect me in New Bethlehem, even though it looks like Rita kind of is. I think Serena's probably going to do more protecting in her position than Nick can.
Yeah.
I was thinking about my comment last week about how I thought we would all be Econo people. And I thought, I wonder if they've got a podcast.
The Econo people?
What if there's like a secret underground podcast in Gilead from the Econo people?
Radio Free Gilead, wasn't that?
Oh, with Oprah.
Yeah, with Oprah. Back in the day.
I bet Serena's got a podcast in New Bethlehem, though.
Oh, she would for sure have a podcast and like a big Insta following as well.
So after Rita and Nick have that conversation in New Bethlehem, we're in no man's land and June is trying to intervene in Moira's plan to head to Jezebel's. She said, I'm going instead. And then Luke and Moira find out about it and the showdown between all three of them happens.
Like, it's a really great moment. Like, I kind of love that they're all at odds with each other. But I'm so curious what everyone thinks about what June's motivation is here. Like, what is spurring her on to intervene, to not want Luke and Moira to go? Why does she want to go? Like, what are we understanding that she's thinking at this time?
My understanding is very basic, and it's that June thinks she understands Gilead, she survived Gilead, so she can go and get out alive because that's what's happened before. And she just wants Luke and Moira to be safe. She loves them. She had so many years away from them. She's like, no, go be in Alaska, be safe. I can handle this. But maybe that's a very simplistic read.
I think I'm totally siding with Luke and Moira in this argument. I think she is underestimating their abilities. She is infantilizing them.
Yeah.
She cannot see them as anything other than sideline actors in her starring show.
Mm. Yeah.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's harsh.
Burn.
Yeah, I don't think she's correct in what she's...
She's not... Yeah.
But that's what her motivation is.
Totally right. I think on Moira, about Moira, she's right. I'm not sure about Luke. I still don't... I'm not sure about him. I have to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, I am, you know, I am. I'm not saying he's bad or anything like that, but it's just kind of like the ending of this episode is so important because at this point where they're having this argument, the three of them are having it out, you're not really sure what anyone's motives are. Like, it looks like Luke just wants credit. It looks like he just wants his turn. He says it. And June, it looks like she's trying to insert herself. She's done it. Step aside, you numbskulls. I've got this. And so it just looks like everyone's just being really shitty and petty and wanting their turn, losing sight of the bigger picture because everyone just wants their shot.
Mm.
And it's all this kind of competitive heroics happening, which makes the ending all the better to actually understand what everyone's motives are.
Yeah, they all have the same base motive. They're just bringing their own insecurities and pettiness and whatever else to the fight about how to go about achieving that motive, which is to save the children of Gilead, fuck Gilead, you know, make it all end.
Yeah, and just be honest about what's underlying it all. Like you've said in previous episodes, Natalie, about how the communication in Gilead is so messed up and you have to read between the lines so much. And I think here, the fact that they're in no man's land it's playing with their ability to communicate with each other so well. Yeah, it's coming across like petulance and let me have my shot. But I think by the end they reach this common understanding that it's all coming from a similar kind of feeling. They're just missing each other in the way they're
and they're just desperate. They're just traumatized and desperate, right?
Yeah. Yep. Relatable.
Mm-hmm. So what happens next? They have this great moment where they're all annoyed at each other and everyone's at odds. What happens next?
Next scene is Lawrence reading A Little Princess to Angela. Right, yes. The first passage where he's talking about the queer old-fashioned thoughtfulness of her big eyes and the little strange girl in the little cap. It's that beautiful scene. So that comes directly after this big fight where Luke has mentioned Hannah. He said, I built this plan from the ground up. This is my chance to fight for Hannah. So it's quite lovely that then we go to this scene of Lawrence reading to Angela, a little girl in Gilead, and in another life that would have been Luke and Hannah, him reading a story. And then the next scene is New Bethlehem and Serena and Wharton walking home, courtship, dancing in the streets.
I thought it was far too neat that Lydia just happens to be there and catch them. Like she's just lurking in the shadows casually and sees them.
Code Brown. This picks up on our last week episode. Natalie, I remember you said you hope that Lydia picks up what Lawrence was putting down.
Yes.
And that hint about Serena being progressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to wake up pretty early to get one over Lydia Clements, and she picked that up.
Mm-hmm.
She sought out Serena Joy Waterford, and they're having their little dance in the street. And, I mean, if there's no more personification of a record scratch than turning around and seeing Lydia. Pleasant evening. So that kind of ends open-ended, that scene. And then we're this final scene. I really want to get your thoughts on this final scene of the episode with Luke and June. There's a bit of a light storm happening. It's very quiet, you know, in contrast to the way this episode opened with all the chaos of May Day. They're just alone. And they have this moment of proper connection. And I think it's the first one we've actually seen between them that's not a flashback. Since June got out, they've kind of had these really missed connection, not communicating. The only time they've actually, pardon the pun, come together was when they were both hot for their spite over Serena, and they both had this kind of, they both said how much they wanted to kill her, and then they just went for it and had sex. So that's the only time reason we've actually seen them aligned. But here it's, you know, on a sharing level, and she's really open about why she's been such an asshole, and he's really open about why he has just been so gung-ho about going in. So I think it's kind of a moment of true connection that we haven't seen between them. What did you think of this scene?
This is kind of what I wanted, like when we had our season recap and we're looking at what do we want from this whole season, and one of the things that I said that I wanted was that I wanted June and Luke to work together and to go into Gilead and fight together to get their daughter back.
Yep.
So in some ways, like last episode, I thought I had predicted, why do I predict anything? It's always wrong. But I predicted that episode 4 was going to have some sort of like major moment, like some sort of explosion, people dying, something that was really going to shock us. And that didn't happen at all. And so in some ways I didn't get what I wanted, but I also have gotten what I wanted.
Yep.
And I'm also really, to go back to the Lydia scene, I am actually really excited to see next episode and see Lydia and Serena having a conversation together and seeing how that's going to work out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I kind of didn't get what I wanted, but I also did get what I wanted. And June and Luke, because part of me in this episode, when they were at odds with each other, I was sort of frustrated wanting to say to Luke, she chose you, you know, like she could have chosen Nick. Maybe she could have been in New Bethlehem and been closer to Hannah, and she could have had a whole other life. She chose you, and you are now like not appreciating that. So I am glad that they're back together and that they're going to go fighting. How's it going to end? Oh my God. I don't, can they?
Let's just enjoy this moment. Yeah, and I, you know, here's where we hear things from June that she's never really said. She's kind of always been on the front foot and, you know, just kind of saying it feels like when we lost Hannah, it broke us and it broke me, and they're acknowledging they are a broken family, like Luke is saying. He's actually given her the pep talk now, and that, you know, like it's, we might be beyond saving, but I already got one impossible dream, I got you back. Mm. And basically acknowledging this is who we are now. it's a bit of a reset. It's certainly the reset that she's been needing across these seasons. So new normal.
It does feel like they really see each other for the first time in a long time in this scene when they kind of have that really cute moment at the end when they're kind of like, well, you know I love you and you know I love you too. And they're kind of chuckling and they kind of really, you know, they have that eye contact. They really actually connect. So
that's right. An actual I love you.
An actual I love you.
Argument avoider.
Love you. So it does feel like a turning point after this big fallout over the course of this episode. So I'm hopeful, like Luke, I'm hopeful that a second impossible dream could come about.
Yeah. And then we have the closing shot of, it's a big swooping shot of them, quite small, dwarfed by this big house. It's almost like a doll's house. And yeah, you see the hill and is it a light over the hill? I don't know. And then it kind of ends. It's kind of another soft ending, but the rumbling, stormy sort of sounds, and Lawrence reading more passages of A Little Princess to Angela. I really loved it. I loved it. I've rewatched the episode, so, you know, we tend to watch as a fan and then rewatch to pick up on things. But yeah, I enjoyed this far more on the rewatch, I have to say.
Interesting, because I only got to watch it once. And I was kind of like you, Natalie, in that I was like, nothing happened that I wanted to see happen. It felt like not much happened in this episode. Mm. We haven't heard what the fallout is from Nick killing those two eyes.
That's right.
We haven't. Yeah, I just didn't. It felt like not very much happened.
Yeah, I thought that on the first watch, I have to say as well. Okay, this is episode 4.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think it was a really strong character one that sets us up. We are almost halfway through the season.
It worries me. It's like, come on, give me some more boom boom. Some explosions or something.
Now we know that, you know, it's probably going to be June, Luke and Moira all going into Gilead together.
Yeah.
We know that Rita has decided to stay in New Bethlehem and, you know, Lawrence has had his big promotion. So I guess they were like the big things this episode.
Yeah.
Which, if I can make a prediction about the next episode, please. I would love to see. I would love to see Rita in New Bethlehem, smuggling through Luke and June and Moira somehow in her house. That's what I want to see.
Oh my god! Okay, through the trade routes. Thanks, Lawrence.
Actually, maybe she'll be a useful Mayday operative in Bethlehem.
Yeah, inside woman. All right, we are in predictions land.
All my predictions are dire. Like, I just...
That's all right.
Yeah. Like, at some point, Lawrence is going to die. When? New Bethlehem's going to go to hell for sure. When? But I'm wondering if that is, having thought about how I thought things were going to explode this episode and they didn't, is this just how, like, it is the final season of the show ever. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if the pace is going to be different because they're just building up to something really big at the end.
Yeah.
So I should stop predicting that the next episode is going to have something major happen. I think that all of the pieces are starting to align.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're getting all the characters in place.
Mm. I agree. Yeah.
So I guess, Jezebel's might be the big moment if that attack happens or gets carried out. So it's when and how that might go ahead that seems to me like it might be the big moment.
Yeah, because that setting brings together all the characters, mostly anyways. You know, you got Janine there and we care about what happens to her. Lydia cares about what happens to her, so maybe she rushes to her aid somehow. Lawrence will be there because Commander Bell will drag him there. You know, Nick might end up dragged there as well. So like it's kind of everyone will end up at Jezebel's potentially.
Yeah.
So I think I might do less of a prediction and more of what I want to see. Because I want to see more of Jezebel's because I hate so far that we have just seen it as women as victims. Mm. And Janine particularly because we saw her last season. She has changed. She is not the Janine we saw in season one. That unfortunately all of that trauma has actually strengthened her as well. And so I kind of like the idea that in this den of depravity, which is being run by women, really, it's full of smart women. Like we learned that when Moira was there, that the women they chose to be in Jezebel's were the ones that were college educated who could actually hold a conversation with these men. So we know there are all these really smart women in there.
And we also know that the Marthas there, when June was there at least, were some of the women that she saved. So remember, she was able to save five people at Lawrence's urging, and they were at Jezebel's. One of them was the one who found her after she'd gone to town on Winslow.
Can I just say I'm so grateful that you are the show's Bible for us?
Yes, thank God. There's so many details that are buried deep in the recesses
of my brain.
It's fresh.
I'm literally off the back of rewatching all of it. So, yeah, where are the trivia contests right now, I have to say, because I would nail it.
Yes, you would. Yeah, so, like, I don't want to see June and Moira coming in to save the day. I want to see the women of Jezebel's and how they are actually already maybe got their own plan, you know?
Yeah. Mm. I don't think it's all going to happen at Jezebel's because that's episode 5. Well, it's setting up to be like the next episode, I would think. And everything June could find to poke holes in it had an answer. So it kind of sounds like it's all set up to go without a hitch. But we know this show very well.
That was the other thing about Lawrence being made High Commander. It really struck me that in the Gilead world, of course, Lawrence is now getting this massive promotion. But in the free world, June should be the High Commander. She should be like a general in this army, you know, and she's not. She's just the person that just gets to lob in some uncomfortable questions on the side.
And has to remind people, yeah, that's because of me. Yeah. Yeah, I poisoned all those commanders. But yeah, so she's not really getting her credit. All right, so that was episode 4. Who knows what episode 5 is going to bring, but we are ready for it. So thank you to my co-hosts, Sana Kadar, Natalie Handley and Haiti Island. It is so good to have you back and all your wild theories and predictions. Can't wait to see how they play out. And thank you for listening. We've got episodes out in the world now and we're loving seeing how you're responding to them. It means the world that you choose to listen to us as you watch all of our favourite shows. And we just love hearing what you think about it. Keep those wild theories coming as well. And reach out on your preferred social media platform. I'm on a bunch of them. You can find me at anything but Fifi. Sana, where can we find you?
I'm at Sana_Kadar on Instagram, mostly. A few other places, but I'm not really checking very much else.
And you can find me at Nat Hambley. I am on Instagram and Threads.
And use that hashtag #EyesOnGilead and we'll find what you're saying about it. And if you like what you hear, please feel free to leave feedback and give us a rating on your favourite podcast app. It helps other people to find the show. Premiere episodes of The Handmaid's Tale Season 6 air exclusively on SBS On Demand on Tuesday afternoons, and on television they screen on SBS Wednesday evenings. And SBS has published a How to Watch The Handmaid's Tale guide with all of the dates and times, because they do change a little bit according to how you choose to watch. So we have a week now to wait until the next episode of The Handmaid's Tale drops. So we'd like to give you a recommendation of what you can watch as you wait. Haiti, well, have you got something to recommend at SBS On Demand?
Yeah, I want to recommend a great documentary which came out towards the end of last year around the US election. And it's a BBC journalist embedding herself in the lives of several different American women who are all part of a kind of new wave of right-wing women in politics. And it is a fascinating little documentary, kind of about like what I'd like to think is the little next generation of Serena Joys out there. Like, if you want to deep dive into some real-world source material for The Handmaid's Tale, I highly recommend this documentary. It's called America's New Female Right, and it's on SBS On Demand now.
Wow. Okay. I've got an SBS On Demand recommendation. It's less one show, but more a whole collection, which we've launched to tie in with The Handmaid's Tale, and it's called Good for Her. So it's you know, strong female leads and female creatives behind a lot of the programming. So I mentioned Am I Being Unreasonable last week, so hope you're checking that out. So we've got a whole collection of TV shows with female villains or, yeah, just complicated women at the centre of these stories, so dive in and see what you fancy. That is the Good for Her collection at SBS On Demand. Eyes on Gilead is an SBS Australia production. We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and we meet on the lands of the Cammeraygal people of the Eora Nation. This podcast is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, don't let those bastards grind you down.
Don't forget to grab a gold watch on your way out. Cars are waiting to take you to the celebration.